Welcome to the A News Podcast. This is episode 43 for December 22nd, 2017. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. This podcast is designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. Most stories have more information at the non-sectarian anarchist news site, anarchistnews.org. Editorial. Being behind the scenes. I work in a project that has a strong face, and it's not mine. The face is a man's face, and the man has accepted that part of his role in this project is to be on social media, to speak for the project, to do the public events, introduce the project to people, to be in relationship with newcomers and other strangers, etc. It helps that this is not antithetical to his character as it is to mine. My tendency is to wait until people have proven themselves by some vague and shifting metric before engaging with them at all, and, as has been mentioned previously, to start with no. So we do different things in the project, and that's great. This is what I would wish for everyone, that people find projects and people to work with that complement and reflect their skills and their personalities. But I also want my work to reflect who I want to be, and maybe I want to be braver, or just more flexible. To come at this from another direction, the roles that we are in fall comfortably into sexist patterns. It is easy for people to not know or disregard my significance in the project and the significance of other people who are also less faced in this project because I don't show it to them. On one level, this is obvious, not worth mentioning. It is the sexism of the everyday. And if people choose to focus on the face, then I'm probably not interested in talking to them anyway because clearly they're not paying attention. On the other hand, my expectations of people are unrealistic and serve as much to box me into my preconceptions as to protect me from idiocy. It is fair for people to engage with me less because I'm unknown. It is harder for women to be known because being public gets women more of a certain kind of shit. My discomfort with dealing with strangers is thus not a neutral characteristic, or one that developed or operates in a vacuum. On top of that, getting older works to make some things easier in one way, since it means that I care less about a certain kind of shit-talking or attention. But it also means that I get put in a mom role, which is irritating to me on every level you can imagine, and probably more. There is no conclusion here, just the ongoing negotiation of project and desire. You know, life. What's new this week? The Elephant and the Blind Man, a response to Burley's 25 Theses on Fascism by Paul Z. Simons. This is a rebuttal to a piece put out by the Institute for Anarchist Studies written by Shane Burley. Quote, Burley fails to include any history of fascism for guidance in understanding its rise, development, and in two cases at least, triumph. Rather, he indicates that virtually any combination of social, economic, and cultural conditions can give rise to fascism. Yet history is clear on this point. There are certain general contours associated with the rise of fascism, including the failed national aspirations of war, economic misery, a restive population, the saturation of culture with nationalist propaganda, and a delegitimized, weakened government. The list goes on, and for Burley to discount such a historically consistent convergence of events and trends adds nothing to our understanding of fascism, either historical or modern. In fact, it obfuscates. Unquote.
Call for presentations. NASIN Conference, June 1 through 3, 2018, in Montreal, Canada. From NASIN.org. Quote, in keeping with the open and fluid spirit of anarchism, we do not limit the call for specific topics of discussion, but rather encourage presenters on broad and diverse historical, contemporary, and utopian matters. NASIN welcomes works that examine issues of indigeneity, ethnicity, gender, disability, sexuality, youth and urban cultures, and scholarship that cross-cuts disciplines and fields, including but not limited to philosophy, political theory, psychology, musicology, literary studies, anthropology, sociology, geography, critical race studies, critical indigenous studies, queer and trans studies, gender studies, labor studies, disability studies, graphic design, and plastic arts. We also encourage scholars in the hard sciences and other fields who want anarchist influences or relevance in their work.
A Nihilist Speaks with the Devil, a rejoinder on the 25 Theses on Fascism, from Anti-Fascist News. Some of the worst academics question things as if they're newborns, with a disingenuous dismissal of how their perspective frames their questions and their conclusions. When did you stop beating your child?
Mexican anarchist statement to those who support the National Indigenous Congress. From Act for Freedom. For those who missed it, on October 13th, the 500 delegates of the National Indigenous Congress reached complete consensus on the proposal presented by the Zapatista Army of National Liberation at the opening of the 5th Congress 3 days earlier. The CNI will collectively enter the 2018 Mexican presidential race with an Indigenous woman candidate at its forefront. This comment is a response to that. Quote, be it under control of capitalists, bureaucrats, indigenous people, or workers, the state itself is the antagonist to personal, environmental, and social freedom. Why do we say that? Because it's the highest organizational form of control, surveillance, coercion, and repression that civilized humanity has created. For that reason, it's absurd to us that Marucci, the candidate for the CNI, is adopting the legal, symbolic, and moral mechanisms that the state legitimizes in order to exercise power. To do so is to legitimize the main executioner of freedom. We know full well that they don't want to come to power, nor to govern the nation, nor can they win the elections. The problem we have with her candidacy is something more serious in our opinion. We are referring to the morality that Murakai is bringing to the people. That morality of the shepherd and the flock, which is the morality of the spokesperson, leader, priest, bureaucrat, prophets, business people, and parties who guide people by claiming that it represents the will of the majority, and in doing so denying them, the people and the communities, the freedom of immediate action to conquer their own freedom. Political representatives are filters, blocks, dispensers who limit and or impede direct action, keeping people and communities from giving themselves freedom and from realizing that they need no intermediaries to do so. End quote.
Greece, Green Nemesis Act 3, Christmas Poisoning Campaign by Green Black Commando, a communique about the poisoning of soda pop. A commenter points out that this is a yearly event, the communique, if not the poisoning. Jay-Z laughed about this action on his podcast and was quick to point out that hydrochloric acid is not lethal.
New anarchist novel published, The Fakir of Florence, from winteroak.uk. Winter Oak is, quote, a non-for-profit organization with a serious aversion to industrial capitalism and a commitment to social justice. Quote, Kudnek has written at least 6 books that refer to anarchist thought, art, and or philosophy. Quote, The Fakir of Florence, a novel in 3 layers, explores in fictional form the connection between anarchism, metaphysics, and artistic expression. End quote. While usually explicitly anarchist fiction is terrible, as is most political fiction, maybe this novel will be one of the cherished exceptions.
5 points against waiting for the next big demo from insurrectionnewsworldwide.com, originally from Anathema 9. Pretty basic points about not waiting, not only emphasizing protests, and not centralizing. Nothing wrong with basics when they're sound.
Actions in Chile and Greece for Black December from Insurrection News. There seems to be a communique from 2 actions, one on the streets in Chile and an incendiary device in Greece, for an anarchist December. Quote, we live in a world in which all aspects of our lives are surrounded by the technological system. The social relationships that are realized through computers and mobile phones are far from real life. Each and every one of us is monitored daily in every corner of the city by cameras, located via the signal emitted by our mobile phones and archived via fingerprints and DNA samples. This is designed to turn each person into a number, registered in a database, so that they are predictable and a safe pawn of the rotten system. Our aim is for a world of rebellious individuals who take their lives into their own hands, realizing their desire for rebellion and freedom. So we've returned to attack the telecommunications company, OTE, continuing our anti-technology campaign. At dawn on December 14th, we placed an incendiary device in the OTE antenna system in Saec, South, unquote.
Catalonia After the Storm, Tomás Ibáñez, from Autonomies. This is a thoughtful and interesting piece that addresses the recent Spanish specifics of a category of events that happen when anarchists are lucky, which is when large numbers of people get out in the streets and force us to decide whether and how we'll participate with them. The occupies were this, as were the events in the squares from Tahrir to Exarchia. As Ibanez implies, there is no one answer, and maybe there is not even any right answer. Quote, with the electoral campaign, when we contemplate the insufferable spectacle of the competition between political parties to reap the maximum number of votes, perhaps it is a good moment to assess the intense period of confrontation between the government and the Spanish state on the one hand, and the candidate to be a Catalan state on the other, a confrontation in which were involved many revolutionary groups, along with anarchists and anarcho-syndicalists, who thought that it was necessary to take sides, that it was essential to be where the people were, and that the choice had to be made to struggle. Today, the question does not consist in knowing if it made sense to collaborate, from an anarchist perspective, with a project whose ultimate goal was the creation of a state, nor whether it was coherent to participate in the contest led by Catalan nationalism. Now it is much more a matter of knowing if the part of the anarchist movement that involved itself in this battle will weigh the pros and cons of its course, or if, on the contrary, it will elaborate an account that will allow it to justify its participation in the conflict, in search of the confirmation that finally it did what was most appropriate in a situation that was undoubtedly complex. What is certain is that the principal arguments of this account are already shaping up and pointing to a mythification of certain events, greatly magnifying them. If it were only a matter of disparities between different subjective evaluations of these events, the issue would not be worrying. Its relevance lies in when we deceive ourselves about how the path that we followed was, as a consequence of which we engender a series of blind spots that cloud our perception of how and where to continue moving forward. Unquote.
Anarchist Perspectives on Net Neutrality, the Digital Enclosure of the Commons, from CrimeThink. CrimeThink continues its slide into realism and mass appeal. Nothing wrong with the information provided here, per usual, just the framing of it as radical. Quote, the benefit for us is clear, and this is fundamental. Structural challenge to the current state and corporate control flows. So our challenge is twofold, both short-term and long-term. First, we must stop the immediate existential threat that we face with the repeal of the most basic net neutrality protections, which threaten to silence our voices. Second, we must build a structural alternative to the current internet, an other internet, where our voices cannot be silenced by a mere regulatory shift because no one else controls it, but the communities that comprise it themselves. A small example of this is the mesh networks that exist today, which are fledgling, but precious examples of the prefiguration of power we wish to see. End quote. Irrelevant aside, it's no victory to see pictures of animals biting technology because they're starving due to loss of habitat and pollution.
Syria. Message from Greek anarchist comrades and internationalist volunteers Ruiz about the liberation of Raqqa. From Insurrection News. Quote, by empowering this revolution, we defend the communal confederalism that has taken root here against the global capitalist system, the fascists, and the dominant state powers of USA and Russia. At the same time, their strategic satellites, Iraq, Iran, Turkey, and al-Assad's regime, work together. The empowering of the Rojava revolution on the military, social, and political level continues to be a part of internationalist solidarity. In defense of the women's revolution and the youth against the system of authority, patriarchy, and capitalist forces is a matter of duty to the fighters of the internationalist struggle and all of the oppressed. Unquote.
Gearing up for January 20th, 2018, week of outreach and solidarity, from CrimeThink. CrimeThink suggests some things you can do in support of those arrested while protesting at the Trump inauguration with videos.
Greece, Athens. Information about the Solidarity Concentration Demonstration for Anarchist Grigoris Tsironis on December 16, 2017, from Act for Freedom Now. Quote, about 150 comrades participated in Independence Square in the Iliopoulos area of Athens, expressing their solidarity with anarchist comrade Grigoris Tsironis, who after 18 months was let out, only to be imprisoned in his home in house arrest until May 2018. Unquote.
Theme Park and Living Laboratory, Lisbon and Porto's Territorial Nightmares, from Freedom News. An excerpt from Avalanche that we discussed last week. A study of gentrification and city development for two cities in Portugal.
Al Jazeera profiles anarchist communist bakery in Paris. Anarchists of the self-management school create a bakery in Paris. Quote, They bake their own handcrafted products, up to 35 of them, that prioritize the organic and identify their sandwiches with historic revolutionary names. The Bakunin with tuna and shallots, the Deruti with chicken, cheese, and curry, and the Marks with baked ham and Emmental cheese, unquote.
What is the color of anarchy? From Anonymous. This essay uses anarchist symbolism as a framework to look at some of the weaknesses of anarchist and other movements. If you can get past the somewhat reductionist beginning, the author does get to a questioning that too, if only briefly, towards the end. Quote, anarchy is, anarchist must be, brown, beige, pink, purple, rainbow-colored, red, invisible, striped, translucent, polka-dotted, yellow or
ochre,
gray, all shades of green, though not green, black, and black and red, though never white, all at the same time. As a bipolar depressive whose mental condition has molded my personal intellectual political positionality in important ways, I guess the anarchy I practice is blue as well. Maybe yours is too.
End quote. Media. Anarchist zines and pamphlets published in November 2017. From Sprout Distro, Avalanche 12, We Endlings from Crime Think, No More Illusions from Solidarity and Defense in Michigan, Anathema, November 2017, a PDF packet called Digital Anonymity and Security that came out of Greece, a reprint of Fighting for Our Lives, A-Tubes, November 2017, and the Olympia Communard. Podcasts. Final Straw Radio, Jude and Betty of Defend J20 gives updates as first trial block finishes. An hour, Sean Swain starts at 2 minutes, 30 seconds. He talks about Palestine and democracy, aka occupation, colonization, and genocide. This Final Straw episode is Bursts, talking with Betty Rothstein of Defend J20 Resistance and Jude Ortiz of Defend J20 Resistance and the titled Scales Collective, about how the case is going as this first trial group finishes up its defense and the prosecution fires its last shots.
December 2017, Bad News, Angry Voices from Around the World, an hour and 24 minutes, mostly news about actions and bad news until the German segment, from about 10 minutes to 16, which has some analysis around the Hamburg arrests and sentencing. This is relevant far beyond the Hamburg specifics regarding police tactics, etc. Following that is an extensive reading of an announcement from a Greek prison inmate with demands against a new prison code. Anarchist Podcast is the voice for anarchist prisoners. Yeah. The last 20 minutes is about the J20 trial with granular detail by the Rebel Girl.
The Guillotine 2. GOP, tax bill, net neutrality, police brutality, and beyond. From It's Going Down. Of all the anarchist podcasts out at the moment, this is without doubt the morning show of them. From the loud hype of the host to the simple slogans to the sound effects. Lots of lecturing on current events interspersed with whoop whoop from Dr. Bones. There were several calls into this episode, so people are actively engaging with the host on the topics. That was nice. The show definitely gets the award for most frequent use of the word community, among other cliches. So, a future drinking game?
The Brilliant Podcast on Contemporary Critiques of Technology, Set 1. The only anarchist podcast that emphasizes anarchist theory. Last series was on exclusion. This one on technology speaks to young and old anarchists and anarchist-friendly folks, and begin some conversations that will continue to play out over this era as the ramifications of current practices echo.
Free Radical Radio, A Burglar's Guide to the City, 35 minutes. The first chapter of a nonfiction book with a fun and literal title. Quote, this excerpt features many stories of burglars and criminals who messed up and got caught, or were betrayed in the case of George Leonidas Leslie, who was responsible for 80% of bank robberies in the entire country during his peak. If a burglary is successful, chances are the normie journalist who wrote this book didn't hear about it, one major exception being the Hole in the Ground gang. Maybe the best outlaws don't make the history books at all? Unquote. I feel like this is the first audiobook excerpt I've heard that fulfills the potential of such a project. It introduces me to a book and author I've never heard of, to a concept that is absolutely in sync with anarchist principles, at least as I understand them, from a perspective soundly based in a variety of fields that I find relevant and interesting, for example, the built environment and how it affects us. And Free Radical Radio frames the content well. Also, the reader was good. Uma Thurman, thumbs up for this.
Take your suit and tie and put it to the side. Let the wind hit your face and breathe the air, because we not scared and we don't care. Trying to find love in the strangest place. You're looking for a sign, but it's in your face. The train don't stop, it's on the road. Just pick up your bags and hit the road. Time to have fun and stop complaining. The weather don't stop, it just keep on changing. I dance with the cats and I chill with the dogs. I play with the bears and I...
Topic of the week. Anarchists storm Occupy Helium Factory. Why are anarchists so serious all the time? Where are the flash mobs, the parodies, the theater? Pranks are fun to execute with friends and also a great way to fuck with the state. Many are familiar with the situationist concept of detournement. But what about when Crass spliced together audio from the speeches given by Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher and released it anonymously, and the tape was taken seriously by the government as legitimate Soviet propaganda? Jello Biafra ran for mayor of San Francisco with the slogan, "There's always room for Jello." All he needed was 1,500 signatures or $1,500 to receive equal airtime as other candidates, which he spent thoroughly mocking the entire political process. He finished third out of 10th place. Jell-O may have been inspired by the yippies, who threw fistfuls of money from the balcony of the New York Stock Exchange. Imagine witnessing the traitors, some of them booing, as others scrambled to grab as much as they could, clutching the notes in greedy fists. Not only were these pranks hilarious, but they earned political, social, and media attention in a way that, in their frame of history, protected them from the negative legal ramifications. Why don't we do more fun things? Must everything be so clinically serious and/or dangerously illegal? Is there room in the gray for cutting up and showing spoof to power? Oscar Wilde is incorrectly quoted as saying, "If you want to tell people the truth, make them laugh, or otherwise they'll kill you." Regardless of whether this was said or not, there is a point. Sometimes you can say things in jest that you can't say seriously. It's not currently illegal to make audio projects that challenge the boundaries of free use and copyright law, or to run for political office as an art stunt, or to parody famous figures to highlight their absurdity. Stunts like these are fun, and they also capture the attention of broader audiences because they disrupt assumptions on all sides. They make people laugh, and then they make them think. Is there room for innovation in the vacuum of dry, serious deliberation? What are some of your favorite historically not acknowledged pranks? Are there still opportunities for more? What fantasies might you unleash as pranks that seriously stick it to the state?
Well, of course, I don't disagree on any level with the thesis. I guess, feel exhausted by the thesis. I guess fundamentally the problem with doing spectacular actions or, you know, large-scale pranks is that, sure, they might get a little bit paid attention to. You might even get a segment on your local news. But ultimately, it I don't want to say it's for nothing, but it feels like drowning out all the spectacular things that happen on a daily basis in your locality feels impossible. And so, and I mean, I guess perhaps this is just the nature of getting older, but I'm perhaps enthusiastic about a group of people doing something that feels like a performance and that feels really fun on its own terms. But to do something as a political practice that has sort of the consequences of, you know, fun, public, outrageous, feels to me like something out of its time. It feels to me like advocating for something from the past.
I actually think that there are a couple different things going on in the question. And the first question, the premise, the beginning, why are anarchists so serious all the time? I actually think that's a different conversation.
Yeah, I agree.
Then why don't we do pranks on the level that was done by the yippies? And I think, and I wasn't there, and I'm too far removed from the history, so I'm not sure if it was a prank, but I think one of the greatest things of all time was the hippies trying to lift the Pentagon.
Sure.
On so many levels, that's just brilliance and challenge and disrupting the state, and yeah, it fucked with Washington on so many levels. And but now, I think part of the answer to that question is that, because in the world of what's illegal and what's not, there is no such thing as a prank or a practical joke anymore. Everything is criminal. I see stories all the time in my newsfeed about high school students pulling pranks that go to jail.
things that I don't think would have happened when I was in high school.
I think that when people realize that we do live in a police state or something that's indistinguishable from what we would define as a police state, you know, perhaps as a bigger smile on its face, I think that would better inform these questions than sort of the moral chastising of why anarchists are bad because they're not doing something.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I do think that anarchists take themselves too seriously. I don't feel like there is a lot of room for humor and laughter and satire in our politics, and that's disappointing to me.
It seems like a cultural phenomenon. I feel like when anarchist politics became decidedly middle class, the humor was drained out of it.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it was within my lifetime that, you know, the Biotic Baking Brigade pied the mayor of San Francisco. You know, even such things as the Yes Men and other groups like that, you know, these are decidedly, you know, anarchistic if they're not anarchist. But there is something that, as anarchism has moved to the internet and the conversation has entirely moved there, that feels like it's not that funny.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, again, just to refer to anarchist news for a minute, the way in which the attempts at humor on anarchist news have been soundly condemned by the quote-unquote responsible actors of North American anarchism, to me, is an example in point. The truth is that you can't even make fun of the people who are absolutely not in power at all without being considered an enemy of anarchism.
And that's a big deal. That's a big line. It's not just that we're going to say that you're not funny. It's that we're going to say that you're against us. And that the only way to talk about anarchy is to talk about taking everything so seriously, and this everything is the most important, that thing is the most important thing ever in that moment, and there isn't any room to address it except for in a very particular way. It speaks to the lack of humor, it speaks to the lack of imagination, and I think it's part of how we can address the lack of a diversity of tactics and approach in the way that we do our politics in the world.
I mean, I guess if I were going to think about this question from a more tactical perspective, I'd basically say that if you want to do something funny, one, don't count on any help, and two, get a group of friends to do stuff together, because your joy, your effectiveness, the plausibility of continuing it over time is going to be entirely reliant on you having a set of friends who enjoy each other, enjoy doing things together, and find those people and then commence laughing because that, you know, as far as I can tell, especially recently, that's the only way in which I can laugh.
Yeah, there has to be joy in the preparation and perpetration of the act itself. And then if there's a punchline at the end of it, that's a nice added effect. But yeah, you have to look around you for your immediate yucks, I suppose. Yeah, I believe that. I believe that too. Like, I was never a fan of the big puppets.
Sure.
But I did appreciate how absurd they were. And I did appreciate how much they kind of freaked the cops out, which I always thought was that their reaction to it was an overreaction. And
well, but if you have a utilitarian view of the world, you know, those puppets do represent a vehicle in which you could be attacked or, you know, they do represent that thing.
Well, I think they also represent they don't sort easily into a category. What do you do with these things?
No, they do.
You do? You think they just sort into the category of threat?
Siege weapon.
Okay, I'm laughing because it's funny, because that's probably incredibly accurate. Yeah. And that's ridiculous.
I mean, I assume you remember when Jaggi Singh did the... what was it? Stuffed animal catapult?
Yes.
Over the fence in Quebec City, and
right.
Was it 99? Or was it 99-ish? Mm-hmm. You know, all the literature from the cops was hysterically functional, in that they were really referring to this thing as a weapon.
Yep.
And of course,
they called the stuffed animals projectiles and ammunition and There was another phrase that they used. Yeah. And, but there was like no one actually said that they were stuffed animals.
So, I mean, our enemies are functionalists, our allies are literalists. And so future comedians definitely have a rough road to hoe in to the extent to which they engage on the level of politics. And that's why most people who want to be funny abandon politics, because it's a humorless place.
In New York, there was a group of people that called themselves Pandemonium. And they did this absolute nonsensical thing where they ran around parts of Brooklyn with buttons and t-shirts on that said that pandas are sexy. And there was some kind of literature associated with it. And some of them pushed around a cooler on a cart and passed out free bottles of beer to people in the streets. And just, and they were anarchists. And this was just to be fun, just to do something. And most of it didn't make sense. And that was okay with them that most of it didn't make sense. What they found out a couple of years later was all of this got deeply integrated into the profile of anarchists in New York. And the authorities found it mostly confusing. And because it was confusing, they assumed that there was something hidden and dangerous in it. And that, like, you know, these pandas had to be code words for something. And it was absolutely hilarious. It came through somebody's lawyer and was clearly not something we were supposed to read, but we were all reading it anyway. So that's like I don't know how to do that. That's not creatively how my mind works, but I approve wholeheartedly of that kind of nonsense, especially when it baffles the state. So I guess that's like I want more of the baffling, more of the we don't know what to do. And
I mean, really, it does. Yeah. That did take, and it was at the same time that flash mobs were happening.
It's true.
And again, because flash mobs were so explicitly non-political, mm-hmm. they weren't treated in this way. I mean, Obviously, you know, towns like Philly that where flash mobs became, you know, kids on bikes rampaging people, it became a thing. But by and large, flash mobs were ignored by state actors.
Yeah, there was a story of a flash mob in Best Buy in a highly trafficked area in Manhattan. And that very quickly got turned into it was some kind of ring to rob the Best Buy. And security was all a flutter, and you know, all the retail establishments in Manhattan were on edge for several weeks because, you know, this was going to be a thing now, and they're going to come and rob us blind, make it look like a. But yeah, they were never particularly treated as a threat. It was just one of those ridiculous things. So they're ridiculous. How do we fundamentally ingrain the ridiculous into our politics? And I just don't.
I think get friends is the first step. Get friends you know in real life.
Like this is how you feed creativity, and being creative is how we're better at being what we're trying to be. And I don't understand any version where that's a bad thing, where that makes us weak, where that makes us, yeah, I don't know.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lynn O'Mabel, written by Jackie. The editorial was written by Chisel, was narrated by Aragorn and Chisel, and we thank Aragorn and Ariel for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material at littleblackcart.com, and news and up-to-the-minute commentary at anarchistnews.org.